Hey, what's up, Bucks County? I know it's been a while. I do apologize. I have been on a hiatus somewhat. I'm about to do a show with Elizabeth Simpson out of California. And I found her through my LinkedIn network, and I found that we had this great connection together. And I really want to do this great upbeat show with her. We are in the same situation with this pandemic, and we really have a lot to share. I really want to do a great interview with her. So I will not start with Hercules today, but I promise you that I will do a show, a podcast on him. I've been asked to do a children's book. I've been asked to do a life story because he was this regal English Labrador, and he has a great story to tell and so much to teach us. So stand by for that information coming in, which will be in the next week. We're coming into the new year, 2021. Thank God there is no 2020. It's over. Let's start over again. I'm sure everybody's happy to get rid of this year because so much has happened. I can't even begin to tell you. I need a podcast just talk about this. So we will. We'll do a show a little bit. I'm trying to get caught up on all my episodes. I still have Brooke to do. I just published Mishner Art Museum. That just went up today. And Brooke is next. And of course, Elizabeth today. And also I've got one tonight with our Bucks County Villa Capri. Matt is going to be coming on. We're going to be doing a live stream tonight with the podcast. So lots coming up. So just stand by. But I really wanted to do a quick intro to Elizabeth. And she's a very interesting person because she is one of those people that is in the airline industry, and she's on a little bit of a hiatus herself. She's on leave at the time of when the pandemic started. So that's interesting that she has been on this leave during this whole time. She is an amazing person. So I want to just do a really quick brief about Elizabeth from her LinkedIn profile before we call her. She talks about that she is a well-seasoned customer service enthusiast who loves to connect with people. She's about to do that. Prior to COVID-19, she spent anywhere from 4 to 6 days traveling the country in a 737. She provided hometown hospitality, pretzels, and smiles to all her passengers. There was not one day at work that she had ever been the same, which she said she had made a great, a fun, and exciting career. She loved her job in the aviation industry. It was wonderful. In the past year, though, she has earned the title of wife to an active duty service member and more recently, mom to a beautiful and sassy baby girl. In addition to the new normal courtesy of COVID-19, all of these life changes have only strengthened my will to adapt to new situations and foster my creativity of connection with others. Socially distanced, of course. I have a background in retail, hospitality, banking, and aviation, and each of these industries have helped to mold me into the person and employee I am today. My education is ongoing in business management, and I hope to use what I learn in future roles to inspire others and remind them that the sky is the limit. I love this girl. I am a fast learner and very teachable. I have learned, especially in the era of technological distractions, that my biggest area of improvement is active listening in all facets of life. I don't know it all and don't expect to, but I do hope to learn and will fully invest my focus on learning to attain a goal. I am currently in search of remote opportunities that appeal to my people skills, adaptability, and flexibility so that I can use my talents while being present and raising my daughter. This woman is very tough, very strong, and in the aviation industry, I applaud her. There's so many out there right now that have lost their jobs in the aviation careers that they had and no longer have. I know pilots, I know flight attendants that are, they're driving buses. They are working at facilities that they never thought they would be working at. So let's give Elizabeth a call. Let's hear her story. of what has happened to her in the last year. We are going to give her a call in just a second. Stand by.
Hello.
Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hey, Martha. I'm great. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I'm so happy we finally connected.
I know.
It's been such a long couple weeks, actually. And I did
it.
I've done a great intro on you and kind of warmed up the audience again since it has been a couple weeks. And I kind of explained a little bit what happened to me. And I took a little bit of a hiatus, and I unfortunately could not have you and a few other people on because of it. So we're not gonna go into it because I really don't want to cry on your show. And you have a lot to tell everybody. So we are, of course, recording. I love how organic and how real our life can get on this podcast, and so do other people. So I started out as soon as I call, that record button is there. And we're just going with the flow today because that's how 2020 has been.
What other choices do we really have, right? We don't have any other choice but to go with the flow.
Right, absolutely. So Bucks County Bites here has this wonderful woman. Her name is Elizabeth Simpson, and she's out from California. And she is going to give us a little bit of intro of herself. And then we're going to kind of just go into what has happened to her in this crazy year, this past year of this pandemic, of this crisis. Because she, and she'll tell you, she was involved in the aviation industry before becoming mom, before becoming the wife, and everything that's happened to her. So, Elizabeth, you're going to take it away and give it all you have.
I got you, Martha. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity once again. This is really awesome to actually be sharing my story because I don't feel like everybody's gotten the inside scoop on the aviation industry other than, is it safe to fly a plane right now? I don't want to travel anywhere. You know, it's taking now, it's more so, you know, hearing rumors about having vaccination passports to travel and just everything's so kind of uncertain, and aviation in itself is so volatile. It's such we always face different, there's different things to face, and then it's always changing, but it's so crucial. I feel like it's so very crucial. And I actually do want to just thank all of the representatives for my company, for my union, other airlines, because we were able to pass, President Trump actually signed off on the COVID relief package recently, and part of that was our payroll support program, and that was something we were really relying on because we met due to my post, because I had actually gotten that warning letter of a potential furlough coming up in 2021.
We have that on our office desk. We have that warn letter. Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And I actually have a lot of us, some people did, you know, it's funny. So everybody has, you know, my Facebook groups keep up because there are thousands upon thousands of us spread out throughout the U.S. Mm-hmm. But we keep up through Facebook pages and, you know, we talk to each other through that. And everyone said, you know, who's going to have a burn notice party? Who wants to, you know, go on FaceTime and burn it together? And, you know, some of us. I'm telling, it was very intense, but for myself and a couple other of us, we said, you know, we're going to keep this. This is a reminder of what could be, and just it kind of is a physical reminder of just how quickly things can change and shift and how uncertain life is. But you really have to, like you said earlier, roll with it, because if you don't, you know, you don't go with the wave and you get rolled over by the wave, and you don't want that. So this whole pandemic, I think, it's definitely been such a challenge in our industry. Personally, I was flying up until, I did my last flight, I believe, in June. I went on maternity leave July 31st, which is my birthday. I was on maternity leave for maybe a month, and then I had my daughter. But I was flying pregnant, and it was my first pregnancy. I just gotten actually married the day before California went into lockdown.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if I told you that.
No, I didn't know that. So wait a minute. You got married the day before the lockdown?
Yes. The day before California officially went into its stay-at-home order, which was March 16th.
Oh, my
we
gosh.
Were the last appointment at the local courthouse, my local courthouse. And it was right before the military had put a really strict ban on travel. So I was able to travel my husband and his family members from himself from Washington State, my family members from LA up to Oakland to witness it. And it was very small, and they had just started COVID or coronavirus implementations as far as who could be there and everything. So it was really limited. And actually that morning they had called and they said, you know, we're starting to be really strict. You're only allowed one person today, or you can reschedule once we open back the rooms, but we don't know when that's going to be. And for me, all I wanted was both of our mothers to be there. That's who I wanted to be there. It was kind of on, you know, hush hush. We're I'm like, oh man, do I cancel and just put it off until we have our huge wedding and we don't even know when that's going to be? Or do we just bite the bullet and talk to our moms and see what the decision is and who can wait outside? And it was really tough. And it was morning of. He said, do you still want to go through with this? And this, and I said, you know what? We don't know what's going to happen in the next few months. And I really just want to make sure that we start our lives together in this manner, because we don't know we're going to get this opportunity. And I'm an impatient person, so I said, let's go do it. So
you just did it, and you were just able to make it happen. You had to.
We did, and it was funny because we have, so my husband said, you know, I want your mom to be there. My mom will understand. You're her little girl and everything. So my mom was in there. We were taking pictures. We were in line. There was actually, I want to say, three more couples. So there's an elderly couple and two younger couples there as well. And it was kind of nice to have that, we normally would go into a separate room to do each thing, and you know, you would have people waiting in line, but really we had to do it at the window of the county clerk's office. So just like you're waiting for a birth certificate or any paperwork, you go to the window. That's where we were officiated and got married. But it was almost like a camaraderie moment with all of the other couples there, because it was like, wow, we all have the same, you know, we're all getting married today of all days.
I just can't imagine what you went through, the feelings that you were experiencing with everything that happened.
It was another, you know, one of those moments you have to make the best of the situation. And I really try to do that in all parts of my life. And in that moment, you know, the clerks had seen everything. We were one of the last couples. So they're like, well, you know what? Nobody's really here. Go get your mother-in-law and your sister or your cousin. And we're like, really? Are you sure? They're like, yeah, have them come in. So we actually were able to have a larger party than what was allotted, which was really nice. So we got pictures and everything. It was really sweet. So that was that. We got married there at the county clerk's office. And from there on, I think we spent maybe a couple, well, first 2 weeks apart, because I was still flying. Okay. And now getting into flying. So I fly right now. I fly for Southwest Airlines. And just a little disclaimer, everything, you know, I'm sharing, this is all my point of view. It has nothing to do with what the company may feel, think, represent. But this is all me. But I've been with them. I'm coming up on my 2 year anniversary in March.
Oh, congratulations. 2 years.
Thank
at Southwest.
You so much. Yeah. Yes.
I love
yes,
the airline. Yes. They are a great airline.
You know
they
what?
Really
it's a great time. It's a great time to go to work every day. I get to work with so many people. You don't always get the pleasure of working with the same people more than once in your entire career, because there's just so many of us. But the connections that we make every single time that we fly and have 3 to 4 day trips with each other, we all just have that camaraderie. We have that family aspect. And my experience there has been so amazing. And prior to that, I was with a different airline. But I was only doing out and back. So I was doing round trips, and that was it for the day. It was like a 9 to 5 flying job. So I started LAX, go to maybe Boise, Idaho, Las Vegas, back through Boise, and end my day at LAX.
Oh, you had a full, so you just kind of, you flew out, you went to your next destination, and you came right back, so you had that full day. That's a nice turnaround. You don't have to do it like overnights or anywhere. You're actually coming right back.
You come right back home. You come right back home. And at
There's
the time,
nice...
I was in the restaurant business at night, so I'd fly to Memphis in the morning and be done by maybe 4 in the afternoon, and then go to my next job and work until maybe 10 or 11 when the restaurant shut down, and I'd do that 3 or 4 days a week. So definitely a different feel, but I was able to taste aviation and really fall in love with the day-to-day.
It's not hard to fall in love with aviation.
I'm telling you, if you love travel, adventure, and I know it's almost kind of a cliche, but when we interview for flight attendant positions, I love people and I just want to travel the world and I just want to.
It's the perfect cultures. Job.
It really it is. As cliche as it is, it is all of that and more. And for me, it's allowed me to travel the world and go to destinations I never would have thought that I would have been able to experience from my old 9-to-5 job at the bank. And that was the whole purpose of getting into aviation.
Yeah,
it's a different feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, we're very autonomous in our roles. So we're very independent. You have to be adaptable. You have to be quick-witted. You have to be able to think on your feet because the situations change drastically quickly. And
on the hour, yes.
If not in minutes. And that's what we're trained to do.
Yeah.
That's what we are trained to do. We're trained to handle emergencies and get everybody off of our planes in 90 seconds or less. To, you know, for the best survivability rate. So, we worked so hard to get to these positions, and that's what I think was the heartbreaking moment for getting that WARN notice this year. Because we all put so much into the job. We have a love for the job that some people will never see in their lifetime, I don't think. Really being passionate about what you do and who you work with, even though you may not even know who you're going to work with the next day, it's a really rewarding experience. So coming into a job that I love and being excited every time and getting, you know, for me, I'm on the West Coast, so we get Hawaii trips, which was a new route for us.
Oh my gosh, now you're making me jealous a little bit here because you have that West Coast chance. Like, okay, I can go to Hawaii, but I can go back home to California. It is a better chance for you to get those flights compared
to
here.
Definitely. And I've lucked out with co-workers who maybe didn't want to work that trip and called me that night before and they're like, hey, you want to do this Honolulu, Maui for 3 days? And I'm like, heck yes, I do. Who doesn't want to go, you know? And taking advantage of that. But I've been fortunate enough to go through and have great experiences. So when coronavirus first hit, I think we didn't quite know what to expect because personally, I say, what if we're the ones who are carrying it? What if we're the ones who are transporting it? Because we talked about the rise and incline all over the U.S. And I believe the study showed everything stemmed from the West Coast and moved, you know, east. And that's one thing where I'm like, well, what are our risks here? And like, this is before masks were a requirement. And thinking back to that feels like it was 20 years ago now, right?
Yeah, well, because I was on a flight too. So in March, and you're talking about March, one of my last flights was back in March, and we didn't have a mask on, and there was hardly anybody on the plane. But I remember, you know, we were talking to the flight attendants, and I had one, she like sat right next to me. We're not really thinking about it because what's really going on? We just talked about it, no masks, And then, you know, you kind of back off because we're not sure, like, what is this? What's going on? What's happening here to our country, to the world? Mm-hmm. That's scary. And that was the last time I was on a plane. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It. So I'll tell you, when everything began, I think first what's halted a lot of the slowed some of the traveling. I don't know about other airlines, but we're high business travel, especially on the West Coast. We do a lot of, you know, San Francisco to Burbank, things like that, Northern to Southern California, Seattle, things like that. And seeing a decline at first, I think for all of us, this is before masks. Okay. That kind of, you know, for us, I think it kind of took, we're people pleasers. We're people. Mm-hmm. We love people. We love the energy. We love to talk to our passengers and really interact, make you guys laugh, things like that. And I think that was the first major change was like, oh, wow. We're usually used to booking 143 seats. We have 65.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you're lucky to have 65 because the flight I was on, we had 8.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I had, let me see. I think I kept a tally. I had 6 flights with less than 5 people.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
Between the course of, I want to say February and maybe May, there was a few. There was even a couple where we had one person. I said, well, whoever you spoke to at corporate, you know, you got your private love
set up. Wow, you had one person amazing? On the flight. I can't believe it. It's just unbelievable.
And, you know, and for us, these are long flights sometimes. You've done, you know, I'm sure the flight from West Coast to East Coast, mm-hmm. six sure. hours sometimes. And to have that and really have nothing to do.
That's terrible. That's a bad
thing. For us, really. Who are constantly in the aisles, constantly serving, constantly talking to people mm-hmm. and playing with the kids, that was a huge thing for us. And then they started the social distancing, and mask wearing was optional at the time. And social distancing was, wow, we are huggers here. We are people who like to be in each other's faces. And really, you know, we vibe off of each other. And that was hard. That was hard on crew members, emotionally, mentally, especially starting to get into the pandemic and locking down. So you have to be solitary when you're home. You have to be confined and isolated. All of a sudden, now you have to do that and be that way on your, you know, your job that you love, that's around people. How awkward and weird that was for us.
It is for anybody in aviation, because the reason you're in there, whether you're a pilot, whether you're an attendant, whatever you do it for you. You love aviation. You love the people. You just love that workforce. There's something about it. It's very strong. It's very like a magnet. It draws you in. And once you do it, you don't want to go back. But when this happened and all those people just aren't on the flights anymore. And I enjoyed it, just being on the flight and seeing the people and talking to the attendants and the pilots, just because I was involved with it. So it was so hard to have that kind of flight. And the next flight I had was September was my next flight, which was from Las Vegas to San Fran and then back to Newark. And it was empty. It still didn't have enough people on there. It was very scary.
I never thought, in being in aviation, this is coming up on 5 years now, I never thought I'd see such empty planes. I never thought this job, where you're constantly surrounded by hundreds of people, you interact literally with hundreds of people a day.
Every day,
going down to less than 100 people, you know, and that includes all our layover, seeing our hotel staff and other crew even hanging out. We usually would get together for dinner or something, you know, we call it our debriefing. At the end of the night or end of the duty day, we get to the hotel. All right, guys, we're going to meet up for a meal and, you know, some wine, beer, whatever, and commune, because we want to decompress together. And, you know, and that wasn't happening either.
You are a great team. Everybody, because, you know, my other half is a pilot, and they did that, you know, every time. They would get together as a team because they work together. This is how everything operates. And you debrief, you talk about the day, everything that has gone on. And it's just a really good community of aviators. And now it's just changed drastically. Like, you know, what's happened to the industry? It's just a scary time. And people don't. And I think people just don't want to fly. They don't trust it. I think people need to gain the confidence to fly again. And that's going to take a while to get it back. Even with the vaccine that's out there. That's still going to, it's going to challenge everybody, because they still don't feel safe. Even with the vaccine.
I couldn't agree more. And I'll put this into perspective. This is one thing that Gary Kelly, you know, I was not fortunate enough to be working for Southwest when Herb Kelleher was still there. But he's one of the main reasons why I came to Southwest. I love his leadership style. I had read his books. I'd read so much on him. And I said, I would love to work for this man. I would love to work for the company that people love to go to work. They love what they do. There's never an opening because people don't leave. And that's something that, you know, I yearned for. And I got my chance. I got my chance. And actually, I was still working for my old company when I think we were just doing a turn somewhere. And I just happened to get a notification that said he had passed away. And I cried. And this is not even, you know, I mean, I'd never met him. He never met me and everything. But because of his reputation and what he stood for, I felt like aligned with my values and where I would like to see myself working, but also getting the call that I had gotten a job offer finally for his company, that his legacy that he left was amazing. You know, in his place. So in his place, I started training, I think it was 3 months after that, after I found out all of that information and was going through it and training, you know, training. We do it in Dallas. We're there for 4 weeks, and it was an amazing experience. You get to really feel It's a very familial, communal vibe that you get from everybody. We are one big happy family, and you know, sometimes we have our nuts and sometimes we have issues, but you know, so Gary's been doing a great job of communicating with us. There's always, you know, there's always going to be pushback between unions and company. That's just the nature of the business. But to really make it all sink in, you know, flying was up after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Southwest was one of the only airlines to first get back on the runway, back in the skies. Were after they? 9/11.
I did not know Southwest was the first one to go back up.
Very quickly, mm-hmm. very quickly, you know, and we thought at that time, I think, you know, how does any aviation company come back from this? Are you going to mm-hmm. come back from this? Because you think of all the other companies that, you know, that dispersed after, that were not there, no longer could survive past 9/11. And we've gone that far. Well, you know, we would get communications from corporate, from Gary, you know, saying, you know, we are very hopeful. We're trying to put ourselves in a financial position to where we don't have to furlough. We don't have to, you know, do anything. So there were options for us as employees to help with the cause, and that's what he first called on us, you know, to help take care of our family and ourselves mm-hmm. to stay in the game. And so the first time there was that relief package, we didn't take any help because we at that point were not furloughing. We had no intention of furloughing.
You were the only ones, I believe, that did not yes. take the package. You did not furlough.
Yes.
And United was United American were like the first mm-hmm. ones. I think yes. Delta followed, but Southwest was not on that list.
We were not. And at the time, it gave us all a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of us, the perspective gain was, you know, we were very fortunate to. I had friends at other airlines. I had friends at United, friends at American, mm-hmm. and other companies who were like, yeah, I got my letter. And, you know, you see them posting on social media, like, I'm really going to miss this. But, you know, and you don't realize how heartbreaking
it is, yes,
how heartbreaking and devastating this is. And there was, I believe I watched a video, and it might have been Virgin Australia. I believe it might have been Virgin Australia, where a flight attendant, you know, wrote that they were closing down all operations, I believe, in New Zealand. And this was peak coronavirus. And to hear her words, I cried. I cried because we really have a love for and passion for this job. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we could do but roll with the waves and roll with the punches. And part of it was, you know, some companies are not able to survive. So
a lot closed down, you know, throughout the world.
So many. And just to be out. And this is something, you know, we always talk about. It's a volatile industry. However, we never think, you know, we're going into work, we're going to get that letter. We never think we're just going to, you know, we think of something super devastating physically, maybe a plane crash or something. Even when our MAX 8s went out, we thought, you know, what are we going to do after this? But we still had so much, and we're still recovering from that.
Right.
So to have the recovery of the MAX 8 situation on top of the pandemic, we were already trying to recuperate and try to get back on our feet. Mm-hmm. So to just kind of have that second blow, but still in the beginning, be able to stand on our 2 feet prior to this, you know, this early war notice, it was something where we felt very resilient. I believe as a company, as cohorts, as we call each other, or our employees are cohorts. We all call each other cohort instead of cohort.
cohort. But, I think I saw that on your LinkedIn. You mentioned yeah. cohort. Oh, here it is. I have it up. It says here, you know, you were talking about this whole industry and the bailout the first time around. You talked about multiple meetings with work group union leaders, and then you're going on. And it'd be nice to return to a job that I really love with cohorts. /coworkers, I love to work with, you know, come April. You were talking about that. I was like, I thought that was adorable when you said cohorts.
It is part of our culture. It's part of our love culture there. We are the love airline, and so that's something that mm-hmm. we really hold to heart. It's been such a situation. So I'm facing also, just to reiterate, you know, I face, you know, getting married, finding out I was pregnant, and then still flying. And, you know, at first for me, because what we talked about earlier, we don't know about this virus. We have no knowledge of this. We don't know how it's transmitted. Mm-hmm. We don't know how many are getting sick. We don't know anything. So for me, I had friends who worked in labs. One of my best friends works in a lab, and she said, I put aside a couple of pairs of gloves and some N95s for you. I really think you should start wearing them when you go to work. And
this is part of pregnant too, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So you didn't even know, like, we didn't know anything about the virus. Here you are pregnant and you're flying, right?
I'm so still working.
You did not know what that virus could do if you got it in you. What could happen to your baby?
That was the biggest fear. And at first, and I believe I might have told you this, at first I wasn't, because of the little knowledge that I had, that we had at the time, I didn't want to stop doing something that I love. I didn't want to compromise in something where I could still continue working and doing something that I love, for something that I, and be fearful of something I couldn't see that I didn't know about. And it wasn't a huge deal to me. I said, you know, if they're, the way they're talking, it's a bad flu and you'll recover and you're fine. But then, you know, one of my family members said, well, Liz, you've got to stop. You can't think about just you anymore. You now have a new life to think about. And that was the kicker. That was when I started to wear a mask and people would ask, oh, you're wearing your mask? This is before they were mandatory. And I said, yeah, you know, I let them know, hey, I'm pregnant. They're like, oh, okay, yeah. Let's make sure that we're extra cautious and you don't have to do this and make sure you wash your hands, you know. And we all had sanitizer. Well, constantly, my hands were so dry from washing my hands so often. And so then you get into the mandatory mask. And we made our customers acknowledge that they would follow our rules, because if you want to travel during a pandemic to keep you and others safe, this is what we're going to ask of you. Because the way that I see it, I think the way that so many others saw it in the aviation industry, again, we don't have so much knowledge, but one, I don't want to get sick because of your negligence, because I get sick and that's my paycheck and that's my bills because of your negligence.
Right.
I don't want to get my 80-year-old grandmother sick back at home, whom I live with.
We need more people to understand that, because there's a lot of people that are not doing that. Not at all. Because you're in a lockdown in California. Well, our state is mandatory. Restaurants are closed. I mean, you can have takeout. Everything is really down. It's almost down to a shutdown. And I don't know if they're going to open back up. But they're defying the orders. There's a lot of people defying the orders. And, you know, even though they say you have to have a mask to go into these stores, there's people walking in without the mask.
Yeah.
And you don't know that person. You're taking a chance. What if that person goes home to their grandmother or their mother who has, you know, congestive heart failure or some other kind of problem, some health problem? Mm. That's a high risk. You go home, that person gets sick and dies. It's all because that one person just didn't wear their mask.
It's out of, and I hate to say it, but it's out of selfishness. It's out of people don't want to be told how to live their life. And I completely get that. We want our independence and autonomy.
We
are human beings. However, as a human being, the human side of me says, I need to put away my selfishness for the good of the group.
Yeah. You did the right thing. You were wearing your mask early, protecting yourself, protecting your baby. And plus you were going home. And if your husband was home, You don't want to bring that home to him either.
Oh my goodness!
No, he's in the military.
Right, he is in the Navy. So, and he works on an aircraft carrier. That is roughly 3,000 people.
Oh my gosh! No,
Can you imagine? No. And that's the reality of the situation. And so, it's so hard to read. Even people close to you, it's hard to read that some people, even 1% of a population, don't recover. They're like, okay, it's only 1%. Well, we have billions of people in the U.S., so that makes a couple million people losing their lives, and you're okay with that? And that's not something I'm okay with.
No, 2-3 million people losing your life? No, that's just, it's astronomical to even think about something like that. You know, thinking about what you're going through, and I when you said your husband's in the military, Navy, on a carrier, I'm thinking to myself, you know, how are they handling? You have to think about the military, how they're handling it. What if you get a lot of these soldiers, military people that get sick with COVID, then our forces are weakened with less people.
Right.
That's a huge problem.
And
Nobody thinks about that.
I don't think so. So one of the things was so many, in particular, there were so many, we saw, I'm sure you saw the situation, with the Theodore Roosevelt in Guam, I believe. They had an outbreak and they had to dock, and there was this huge thing going on over the course of the past year. And basically, you know, the military, they now have, they have their tools and everything. They have a system that works for them. But you're right, the travel ban was, I think, the hardest thing on military families, because now, you know, we were just stationed somewhere else, and so many people's families are maybe even as far as the East Coast. And because of the pandemic, they were never able to take a leave and fly home unless, I believe there's like some sort of a immediate family emergency.
Yeah, that's the only
way. Passing away. Right. Yes, that was the only, and so you got to think, some of these people haven't seen their military family in over a year and a half, going on a year and a half, because you don't know how long they hadn't seen them prior to that.
No, it's been a long time. So some people haven't seen, it's been longer than that. Yeah.
It's challenging. It's definitely challenging. I can't imagine. I was fortunate enough to do lockdown with my husband, and that was kind of our honeymoon, which is kind of a weird honeymoon, not what I would prefer.
That is a strange honeymoon, I have to say.
But I will say, you know, there was a joke going around that, you know, you come out of this, the quarantine period, either more in love or divorced. And, you know,
oh,
for us,
I've
luckily,
heard that many times.
luckily for us, you know, it helped our relationship for the better, because we had no choice but to hunker down and really get to know each other.
Best situation you had. You just got married, you know, you're having a baby on the way, and now you're stuck inside a house with this beautiful person who's your husband, and you really get to know him. Like I said, you either love him really a ton by the time you're done, or you end up hating each other and you just want a divorce after a very short
time.
That's it.
And you really, you know, and it was definitely not where I would have chosen to honeymoon. However, it was, we're going to try to make up for so many things, because we did miss out on so much this year. And, we're just going to catch up later on, but it definitely, the whole situation of going through life changes, but having to go through the pandemic as well, and then also being in an industry that was highly affected, it's a lot. It definitely took a toll. It kind of flipped everything I knew upside down, because I'm a people person. I now don't have connection. I don't have, I'm in a lockdown where I can't go to work. And so what our company did, like so many, to try to save jobs and to cut back, was offered company emergency leave, where you would take a month off. You would bid for it. If you were able to fill one of the spots, you know, you got the month off.
Okay.
And they would pay for your benefits. And at that point,
that's good.
It was good. And it paid minimum hours. And I will tell you, it covered just enough for benefits. But at that point, you also could file for unemployment due to pandemic at that point. So there was something supplemental. I took it eventually, and at first, I remember I told you I was working. So I was still working, and I think what did it for me, I worked a flight. I guess.
Was it summertime? Back in the summer? That you did the last one?
It was spring.
Oh, spring it was. Okay.
So, and I'll tell you, this was one of my final straws, was flying. It was right after the masks had become mandatory, and in some states, there were protests going on of the mandatory mask wearing, and I happened to fly out of one of those states to another state on the East Coast, and I had just started showing, my stomach had just started to show when I was in uniform. It was pretty small, so you couldn't really tell I was pregnant unless I told you. And I got put on a trip. I was on call, and when you're on call and a junior flight attendant, you're just told where to go, what time to be there, and you just go. So I was put on a trip. I was flying leads. I'm that person who was on the PA and welcoming you up front. And I was that person. And this was right when masks became part of our contract of flying. You know, you have to wear your mask unless you're eating or drinking something. And so that's where people found their loopholes. There were three families towards the back of our aircraft. And I'd walked past a lady. She said, "Are you going to tell them to put their masks on? They haven't been wearing it this whole flight." I said, "Oh, here we go. All right, let me go approach them, see what's going on. Hey guys, just to let you know, we do need you to have your masks on. This is part of, you know, our contract of flying. I appreciate it. All right." And I give them, you know, I let them know, because our job is to inform them, not enforce. My job is to inform you of what you're supposed to do. I can't enforce it and say you have to put on right now. I don't know if you have a medical condition. I don't know what else, you know, what's going on. You might be drinking or eating lunch, whatever. And so I told them, I said my piece. I let my other flight attendants know, hey, I got a complaint about this group. Maybe just keep an eye on them. We might have to give a gentle reminder to the general group and try to, you know, you kind of have to go about this politically. And so I said, you know, let them know if, you know, I'll walk past again and make sure they're taken care of. So I did. They all put their masks on except for a few people who were eating, drinking. I said, I'm not going to even, you know, pick your battles. Mm-hmm. And go up to the front. Immediately, as soon as I get to the front, one of my coworkers says, gets on the PA and says, ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, for you and for everybody's safety, you do need to remain in your seat wearing your masks. This is for the, you know, the safety of yourself and others on the aircraft at this time, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Well, we let a little bit of time go by. And finally, I walk again. Somebody comes to me this time, comes up to the front where I might have, I think I was sitting in a seat or something. Comes up to me and says, ma'am, you know, I thought we were all supposed to wear masks. I've heard you guys say it. I don't know why. I said, I hear you. Let me go see what the situation is. I walk to the back, same groups. I'm assuming traveling together or know each other of some sort. I don't know, but they're kind of spread out. And I say, hey, guys, so if I could have your attention for a minute. And I start grabbing my belly. I say, you know, I can't tell you, I'm not going to tell you what to do because you guys are all adults here and you guys all control your own children, but I'm going to let you know for my safety, and I'm rubbing my belly as I'm looking at them, you know, for my safety and for the safety of my future child, I ask that you please wear your mask for out of respect and safety for myself and my child.
What was the outcome? What happened at that point? Because, you know, you were trying to get a message across to these people that, to wear this mask. And you were doing... What was the reaction?
We got big eyes. We got people, jaws drop, and then we got masks going up. Or face coverings going up.
Okay.
So it worked. It worked in my favor.
It did work.
It worked in my favor, which is what I was hoping for. But it shouldn't... I feel like it shouldn't have taken that.
No.
But at that point, the anxiety of the whole situation, the anxiety of it all, returning back to my seat and maybe having lunch or something, trying to be normal. The anxiety of having to confront that situation, put myself in front of those people who weren't wearing masks, and then asking them and pleading with them for, you know, for my daughter's future and her health. Mm-hmm. That's what it took. It took physically me going up there multiple times and asking them.
And that was the last time you did that.
That was the last time. Mm-hmm. The anxiety, we weren't getting paid extra to tell them, you know, because at that point, I'm telling you, we have to inform you of what our regulations are. We have to inform our passengers because that's what our job is on board. But we cannot, I'm not going to physically walk up to you and pull your mask up over your nose. No matter how much I really want to do it, I'm never going to do that. Mm-mm. That's assault. And so, you know, in some variations,
you can't do that.
But, the anxiety of it all, you know, I said, I was talking to my coworkers that night. I said, you know what, you guys, this is too much. This is a lot of pressure for me to try to make sure that we all stay safe on strangers where, in my mind and in the type of person I am, you do what's good for the good of the group, because that's being human. That's having a heart. That's human kindness. Mm-hmm. That's wanting people to survive and not get sick. That's wanting a future for all of us that doesn't involve, you know, oxygen deprivation and long-term health effects. Mm-hmm. That's moving on past these barriers and borders of masks to smile at somebody and actually see their smile, of not being afraid to go to the grocery store to get groceries again and run, you know, minuscule errands that you never thought. You know, I think people were saying, wow, like my trip to Target, Walmart, Costco, whatever is my outing. Like that's how I get out of the house.
Right,
now.
That is your outing.
You know, it really became a way for us to still somehow feel a part of normalcy.
Yeah, once we started to do that a little bit, you know, you're going out to the stores, but, you know, it's very limited. Like, we stay very limited, too, when we go. It's just, it's still worrisome because we still, you know, we go to the grocery stores. You think about how many people do go to these stores, and you're still getting, you know, the even though they're cleaning, it's still a risk. It really is. You got to really be cautious of where you go and how you have to think about what you're planning to do. and make sure you have all your PPE gear. It's just a whole different process, you know. And a lot of people, that they're just staying home, and they're staying home with the kids, and, you know, they're teaching at home. The kids aren't going to school. It's just become a whole new lifestyle. Everybody's Zooming. They're Zooming with their dogs, their kids. People are Zooming with wine and beer, and people are just, you know, but you're missing that whole, the love and compassion of
human
the
connection.
Yeah, the connection's not there, and it's still, it's very strange. It's very odd. I really thought that by the end of the year we might see a change, but it didn't. It got worse, because my last trip I just did, I went to L.A. I flew to L.A., which was very strange. There was really not a lot of people on that flight from Newark to LAX. And to get to LAX and get an Uber, I was so, let me tell you, I was scared because California shut down. And I wasn't what to expect. I wasn't even sure if I could get a car. But I got the car, I got the Uber, plexiglass all the way around. Wow. And all the windows were open. Couldn't hear him. And then at the same time, the guy was, he was very much of a very nice man, has a heart. His wife had made all this food. And on a daily basis, when he has an Uber trip, he delivers the food to the homeless.
Oh, wow.
So I was kind of worried about that a little bit, because now we're dealing with people that they're not wearing masks. The homeless aren't wearing masks. And I'm in the back of a car and we're doing this. But at the same time, like, I felt very heartwarmed over it. At the same time, I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to get caught. I just want to get to my destination.
That's it. Safely. I was still, so when I was traveling, so I was going back and forth. I stopped flying. My doctor was still in the Bay Area, but I was staying with my husband in Washington State. So I would fly back, and I still had to fly back for my appointment. So that, I wasn't flying, and now I'm flying as a passenger. I'm not flying for work.
Right, you're as a passenger.
How did that
feel?
More nerve-wracking than actually working the flight, I tell you. I think one of the biggest things to see how impacted we were, the first thing was to see SeaTac so empty.
Oh, I know. The airports. I know.
It's the airport. Ghost towns. I have so many. I have pictures of my last few trips. I have friends who have taken pictures of just seeing these major airports. So you see thousands of people, and it's a ghost town. Everything's shut.
Everything's closed.
There's
a
gates
ghost
over
town.
All of the... I'm telling you, no newsstand is open. The restrooms are shut down in this wing.
It's everywhere because I've done... So yeah, Newark is a ghost town. They're all closed down. There's nothing open there. Mm-hmm. I've been to Denver. Denver's a ghost town. Nothing open. I've been to Las Vegas. Now, Vegas, on a holiday, it was Labor Day. It was a ghost town. Nothing's open. San Francisco, same thing.
Yeah.
Where's the thousands of people that would normally travel? And LAX was just the last one. I just had no words.
Isn't it? It's so eerie.
It's eerie.
I think the first
ghostly.
Time I saw it, I think, where was I? I think I was on call. This was earlier. I think this was in maybe February. So, you know, things are just starting. It's really becoming big, but they're starting to be locked down and things closed. I had been put onto a trip. And this was when New York's was very bad. This is when they were sending only medical personnel. Medical personnel was the only ones that were on planes. This is when we had the 5 to 12 people per plane. That's when I would say that the highest part of it. And I got put on a trip and we had to go through Buffalo. And I was pissed. And I said, I do not wish to go anywhere near New York or Jersey. I have no desire.
The tri-state area, you had the New York, New Jersey, even Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. We're in a very high rate here. I live in a nice area, Bucks County in Pennsylvania, on the east coast of PA, and our rates are high because we've got the Jersey and the New Yorkers, and a lot of them are leaving. They're leaving the cities. They're leaving everywhere and coming here because they're trying to get away from it, and they can work anywhere now. So they're just their rates are so high up there, shut down. It's scary, very scary.
It really was, and I think the day that I went through there, I didn't even want to get off the plane, but we ended up having to wait an extra hour, and we only had maybe 8 passengers or something. Wow. And I said, well, I might as well go get a coffee. And they said, well, good luck. And I said, well, yeah, let me try. And so we're walking through. I think it was myself and another flight attendant. We're walking through. There's nobody in the terminal. It looks so dead. And that was the first time I'd really seen a dead airport. And I'm like, man. And I'd been through there before. Eerie. It's usually busy. There's usually more planes. There's things that are open. Sure. All the restaurants are shut down.
Planes we had to go and all restaurants. The way through, yes.
All the way through. I think we exited security so that we could get a coffee. It was crazy because nothing else was open. And it's really, I can't even think or imagine. Can you imagine? I don't know. If larger infrastructures like these grocery stores or anything, these things shut down too. I'm taking something as extreme as that and looking at an empty grocery store and you're like, what happened? This is the zombie apocalypse or something. I just don't know.
I never forget the first time I walked into, and it had been a while because I hadn't gone in, because I was like, no, I don't want to go in. I don't want to see. But I finally decided to go in, and I'm like, I'd never seen anything so empty in my life. The shelves, I took pictures. Mm-hmm. The shelves are so empty. Like, you can't even get anything.
The spaghetti's gone, the soup's gone.
And it's like that again. Uh-huh. It's like that here in Pennsylvania. You can't even get, you can't get toilet paper again. You can't get paper towels. Wow. You can't get even tissues. And forget the cleaning products. It's still not there.
Right. I think when we started hearing about the toilet paper, Oh, God.
I didn't even know what was going on when that whole toilet paper thing was
I didn't either. And I said, you guys are, this is a joke. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a popular meme going on until I actually saw videos. And then I'm, you know, I call my sister and my mom and I'm like, is this a real thing? They said, yeah, they're limiting. If they do get stuck, you get limited one and people are fighting over it and people fight over bottles of water.
I had to go to my mom's and steal toilet paper. I was like, Mom, do you got toilet paper at the house? And I called my other half. I was like, his mom was in Florida, Snowbird. Do you have toilet paper at the house? She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, we have just nothing here.
We need some. We need toilet paper. They're not selling it anymore. It's like, well, they're out crazy. Of you know who boomed at that time? There was actually the companies that sold wholesale. So I guess like Costco, Staples, things like that. Selling what they normally would to hotels, the economy size, you know, toilet paper, they started selling, they put it out there. So I know my sister bought, I think, 2 packs of economy size toilet paper. So she said, I want that for 2 years. Here, you can have some. Did you want some for Christmas? You know?
Oh my gosh.
And they're set. But she said, I'm not going to panic buy, but I am going to definitely just stock up because I can't get it in any of my stores or in my superstore. So.
I know. Every state's different too. I knew that. I talked to other people, like from down in Florida was different versus like go out to the West Coast, even the Midwest. I mean, everybody was experiencing something a little different depending on how their numbers were, if like they were really bad. Everybody just went to a panic state and just started panic buying, hoarding.
That's it. And then you have all of us coming home from our trips and it's like, wait, I need to go to the, you know, some people, you know, we come home maybe for a day or two, unpack our bag, repack our bag, restock our lunch bags, and then go back on the road. And some people have to travel to other bases, so they fly from one city to another before they start another 6-day trip. And you know, they go home and they're like, I can't even get home and buy toilet paper. I have no toilet paper at my house because I go home for one day, and that one day they had none in stock, and that was kind of sad. I'm like, wow. You really can't even just get a necessity. And why are we buying so much toilet paper? What is the deal with this?
I know.
I do have to commend all the flight attendants and pilots, ground staff, everybody who has continued to work throughout this pandemic. I know I have some classmates of mine, people I've gone to training with. We all remain very close. And to hear some of the stories they've shared of continuing to fly throughout the pandemic, and to see, you know, we get screenshots of how long their duty days are, where they went, so which cities they went to, and how far they were stretched, because we have limitations on how long we can fly in a day. And that's already hard enough, but to do it with all of this kind of chaos going on, there was never any infrastructure for a pandemic. Mm-mm.
Nothing.
There was never protocol put down. There was never, this has all been a, we're making it up as we go. And
that's right.
It works.
I saw all those company emails coming in. I was reading all those emails from United. I'm like, I just kept up, and it was so much information trying to keep up. They were doing it as they were going along.
Every day we had something different. We went from still serving snacks to only giving a closed water can that you had to pour yourself to nothing at one point, nothing at all.
Yeah,
if you wanted
to
drink, you bring it yourself. I remember flying, I think it might have been a Hawaii trip, and I believe we had just cut all service, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember seeing families on there who are like, oh man, I don't want to go back and get stuck at the airport. And then you hear them coughing.
Oh,
and I'm like, that's reassuring. And then you see, most rows of people are sanitizing their seat areas, because that's been one area, with the airline industry that's, we're trying to protect passengers and everything, but you see people wiping it down. And that was one thing. So many of us made an effort before we took off each time, because there'd be so many sanitary wipes. We say, we're going to come by and pick up all of your sanitary wipes and all of your trash before we take off, because this is a lot. I've never seen so many Lysol wipes.
I can't imagine what you saw.
And then you get some of those people who are like, I don't understand what the big deal is. And it's like, that's what the big deal is.
That's what the big deal
and
is.
And now I'm flying 6.5 hours with you on board coughing. The big deal is.
I do remember that kind of on that one last flight back in March that I did. And I remember being on there and I remember somebody coughing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is that something I have to be alert? Like, should I be alarmed?
Yes. Everybody freezes.
Now if somebody coughs on it, you do not want to cough on a plane today. You don't want to sneeze. You don't want to cough. You'll get kicked off pretty quick.
I'm telling you. Well, and it's, but I hate to say it, but even us, we have suppressed, our coughs. Like, I have to cough, but I'm going to go to the bathroom to do it, because I don't know what's, you get paranoid and you don't want people looking at you like, because then you become a pariah. You become,
You are marked if you do that. Because I have this little thing where, like, if I sneeze, it's got this nerve reaction, and it might be just because I have an allergy or something, but if I would sneeze, I automatically cough. And, like, if I sneeze three times, I cough a few times. And it's got nothing to do because I'm sick. It's just like, I had a sneeze. I had a tickle. And especially during allergy season. Oh, you did not want to. I forget where the heck I was. I went to a restaurant and I got one of those allergy things. And all of a sudden, I'm like, uh-oh. I started sneezing. And then I started coughing. I'm like, I have to leave the restaurant because I can't be here. Because they're going to throw me out of this. Because they're going to think I'm sick when I'm not. I mean, I'm not sick. I just, I have these fall allergies that I get. And, that's when they still had the restaurants starting to open, but of course now they're closed again. So
it is a very weird time.
It's just a scary, weird time. And to think of you going through all this here, getting married, having this, you're having this baby during this whole pandemic. I mean, the story that you told, just with everything that's going on, people want to hear this. They want to find out what it's like to be a flight attendant or be a pilot or anybody in these industries. Your story is going to be very popular, I promise you, because you are, even though you're not flying right now, am I correct?
So right.
You're not doing any. And do you plan, when they do come back, do you plan on going back to be an airline? Are you going to go back to the airlines?
So, especially now that we've thrown out the war notice, I this is my long-term career. I definitely am looking for, I am looking for an open opportunity. I'm going to try to work on my education come this spring semester, so middle of January, just open up my opportunities. And I will say, out of everything in 2020, no matter how challenging it's been, I will say I've learned to be present. I have learned to be present in the moment and to be present with my loved ones, and especially seeing now, being present in my marriage and with my daughter, because you don't get those moments back. You don't realize those small moments in day-to-day things. You know, some people will never get that with their children because they're just right. so busy, constantly working, constantly on the move. And that is our job. And for me, that is what I've always done, is I've always been on the move. I've always been had my hand in something, working on something, volunteering, doing something. And this year really made me slow down and really be present in the And for some of us, that was very challenging. It still is very challenging. But at the same time, I have found such a silver lining in that being present and taking advantage of the opportunity of being with my family. And I do plan to return throughout this, but all these changes. We actually moved to San Diego over the summer. Okay. I was 8 months pregnant.
So you moved at 8 months pregnant to San Diego.
I did. While my husband was still in Washington, I took care of the move for us.
Oh my gosh, he still was up there. Wow.
and so when I return, to work, I will be a commuting flight attendant. So okay. I will be commuting from San Diego up to Oakland, where I'm based. And thankfully, there is flexibility. I am grateful to still have a job, but I'm open because I realize how much I want to be there for my daughter. In these early months and years, because I see so much love and I see so much opportunity in being there for her and with her, and I won't get those moments back.
No, and you can help. I mean, you can teach her, educate her, you be with her and mold her into this little girl who, you know, is growing up in a new world. So you want to be there to support her and help her. You know, the kids are the ones that really are affected by all this. You know, they don't understand, especially the very young ones. And for you to be there for your daughter during this time is very, very important. So in a way, this weird thing that happened to the world has been a blessing in many ways.
It has.
I hate to say it, I mean, it is. It's been a blessing.
It is.
Although it's been horrible on economics, on everything else out there. There is so many silver linings to this story. Of the world,
and there is
and family and connections is one of the big ones, and you know, the pollution factor, you know, the less traveling, people not driving, even, you know, less planes in the sky, everything, it's really made an impact in the world, less of everything. So yeah,
we really see the impact that we could have on the world, especially with the pollution, like you said. I think they showed, was it so many different places? Like,
oh, they did. I remember seeing
that. Was it Venice? They had dolphins.
Venice and China, and you know, even San Francisco, California, because the skies are very. I mean, they get very cloudy from the pollution there, smoggy and all that. But when you saw the pictures of, you know, no one's driving LA,
right?
But all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you got blue skies in California. In that area that you never had blue skies. And then you'd see these places that had the water was clean. Like it was blue. Right. And people just couldn't get over the fact that, you know, at a short time after not traveling and polluting the world, it really did start cleaning itself up. It was very, very odd. You know, there's a message behind all of this. There is somehow the world tries to tell us, you know, warn us. And things start to change rapidly. You know, things are now different. People are working from home. They're not traveling. And it's, you know, people are moving to cleaner areas, to more rural areas, to more of the suburbs and not so much the cities. But then the cities are hurting. Those businesses are hurting bad.
Yeah.
So you've got good, you've got bad out there from this whole pandemic. It's a really strange world. Very strange.
But, I think it's a challenge to us. It's definitely a challenge to us.
Yeah. You know, your coworkers, people are going to love your podcast. I can't wait for this to be out there and for people to hear, especially, you know, you're working in the airlines. You have a lot of coworkers and you're going to be like, hey, everybody, I was on a podcast. Listen to me. Listen to this. You're going to be very excited.
I thank you so much for this opportunity. I do wish that I could give you a little bit more insight as far as what it's been to fly throughout the pandemic. And all I can say is thank you to everybody who's been working throughout, for giving me the opportunity to be home with my family and be safe and, continue to carry on, and take care of our passengers the best way that they can, because I would love to be there with them too, but I know that they're doing a great job, and I'm so proud of them. I'm proud regardless of getting furlough notices or not, I'm proud that people still go into work doing what they love, making the best of the situation, because that's what I would do. That's what I would do. And I hope that people who are flying, traveling, who are, you know, using resources at the hospitals, you know, especially those first responders, I really hope that people take this seriously, for their sake, for their loved ones' sake, for the people who would have to be in the position to take care of them and are still showing up to work, to make sure that their needs are met. I really hope people take that into consideration when they make decisions right now until we get used to this new normal.
Beautiful message, Elizabeth. I really appreciate all the time you put in, and that's a beautiful message to the world, to all the listeners out there, to the people in aviation and non-aviation. I really do hope they take heed, listen to you. And we hope that this new world, we can all adjust to it and start to learn from problems that we've had in the past and things that are going to, you know, and they're going to still change. We know that. And we just have to learn to adapt to it. And
we must be resilient and adapt. That's
all we can do right now. That's right.
All you can do is pivot, not panic. And I hope you recognize that
one. So I love that, pivot, not panic. You should have a t-shirt. You should market that and get that out there to everybody.
I definitely will work on that. I'll work on that. Thank you so much for having
me. You're welcome, Elizabeth.
I really appreciate
your
time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Enjoy and love your family, your husband, your baby there. And be safe, stay well. And it was a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Yes, thank you so much, Martha.
Take
care over there. All right.
Take care. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everyone, that was the beautiful, wonderful Elizabeth Simpson, who is a Southwest employee, Southwest flight attendant. And she gave a beautiful story, what it's like to have been on the plane back in those days in the beginning of the pandemic, and how it's changed over the course of this pandemic, of this crisis. She has a great opportunity to be home with her family, with her husband, with her child, to change the aviation industry. And it's such a short time. It really has made drastic changes from time of March on all the way to December. I've been on a few flights, and she's been there through quite a few flights in the beginning. But we hope that things will go back to somewhat kind of a new normal, and people do gain the confidence to fly again. But at the same time, we have to take precautions, and we have to be safe. Southwest is one of those airlines that is very safe to fly. I know quite a few that fly. They do not have those middle seats booked. They really, really go to that social distancing on the plane. So everyone, just think about your future, what it's going to be like. Make sure to pivot and not panic and adjust accordingly, because there is no normal anymore. We really are in a new normal life, and we need to adjust to it. Everyone, have a great evening. We will be talking again soon. This is Bucks County Bites, over and out.